Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome to another edition of GVN Interview, your home for conversations with some of the best in film, television, media, and literature. On today's show, we welcome multi-talented actor, musician, and voice performer, William Catt. Now here's your host, Martin Sexton.
Welcome to another edition of GVN Interview. I am your host, Martin, and today we have the pleasure of talking to multi-talented performer William Catt. William is partnering with Blackstone Audio and Monstrous Books, performing the audio version of the original novel that started people's fascination with Carl Kolchak, Jeff Rice's Kolchak the Night Stalker. So we're going to be talking to William a bit about his career and this exciting new project. So let's welcome William Catt to GVN Interview. So how are you doing this morning, William?
I'm doing real well. How about yourself, Martin?
I'm doing good. I just got off from the paying job, so I get a chance to relax a minute here. Okay. So I do want to thank you for sharing a bit of your time, William. But since this is the first time I've had the pleasure of speaking to you, I want to start with a little bit of your creative beginnings. Now, along with acting, one of your first loves was music. So what type of music did you gravitate to, and whose work inspired you maybe to consider that path?
Oh, wow. I was a huge fan of Joni Mitchell originally, and Stephen Stills. And, you know, that was kind of my beginnings, you know. But I've really gravitated. I did an album actually for MCA many, many years ago. It was a pretty good album, overproduced. But, you know, that was Big Hair days back in the early 80s. And but I still play music all the time. I was playing in a little jazz group here for a number of years up until recently when some of the members decided they wanted to move out of California. But I was doing that, and I've been playing music pretty much. I play piano or guitar every day. You know, I'm a professional hack. That's what I am.
Owner of many, master of none.
There you go.
Yes. So, were you self-taught, or did you take, music?
I was self-taught, but I studied music in college for the first 2 years of college. And then I went off to the National Guard, and then I didn't pursue music. I didn't do music theory after that. You know, I just played. I was playing in bands and stuff. Actually, before I did Carrie, just before I did that film, I was playing regularly. At different little clubs, worked a lot with Al Jarreau, and I started kind of at the same time, although we didn't play the same nights, but I knew Al and some of the people he was playing with. And that's where I started back in the early 70s.
All right. Okay, now, of course, since both of your parents, Bill Williams and Barbara Hale, were in the acting field, it made sense that you would eventually gravitate toward that profession. But did your parents ever, did they encourage you to pursue acting, or did they ever try to point you in a different path?
Well, they were encouraging to a certain degree. My mom said, do anything you want to, you know, follow your love, you know, whatever your passion is. And my dad was like, yeah, follow your passion, but get an education first.
Right.
So that's where that was, you know, but I went on and I pursued acting, and I got very, very lucky in my career. I started at South Coast Repertory in Orange County, an award-winning rep company. And I went on, when I got out of the guard and I had after my 6 months active duty, they were gracious enough to let me go and do theater all over the country. And then when I would come back, I'd make up my time at the base. That's the only way I was able to pursue acting. And you know, I was what was a big push in my career. I got to play the main bad guy with Angie Dickinson on Police Woman. That really gave me a boost and lended itself to finally getting Carrie, you know, which I was very, very lucky to get into that film, which provided a career for me.
Okay. So, you know, at that time, as you say, as you were kind of honing your craft, did you have a preference of what kind of jobs you got, or did you just took whatever opportunities came your way?
Well, you know, you try to make a living as an actor, particularly as a young actor, you know, you want to make a living. So you take what jobs are available. But my preference would be theater, you know, 100% of the time. I love doing theater. You know, as I've gotten older, you know, I've done less and less theater since about 2003. I stopped pretty much doing theater because I was away from home too much. You know, I was away 6 months a year doing theater. Then I come home and I do a film or a TV movie, and then I'd go off and do theater again. I put an end to that because it was just too hard on the family.
Okay, so, you know, you had mentioned your role in Brian De Palma's Carrie. So what do you remember from that experience? And as you said, it kind of shaped your career going forward.
What do I remember is that we all had careers as a result of that film. It was a seminal film for Steve, for Brian, and I think for Sissy Spacek as well, and John, of course, Travolta. But we all had careers as a result of that film. It was just a ball. You know, we were all in our early 20s and getting a decent paycheck, and there was a lot of laughter, a lot of fun on that set in between the scary moments that people remember on film. But behind the scenes, it was a lot of fun.
Okay, now, as I was researching for our interview, and of course, I know you've talked about this ad infinitum, I'm sure, but I saw that you were in consideration for the role of Luke Skywalker in Star Wars, which they eventually gave it to that Mark Hamill guy. How did that opportunity arise? And when you were pursuing that job, did you have any indication that film would become as popular as it turned out?
None whatsoever, you know. And I think it's famously noted that George Lucas and Brian De Palma they shared the casting responsibilities, they saw pretty much every young actress and actor in New York and Los Angeles at the time. And I was just, I don't know, I was lucky enough to get one of them. I would have loved to play Luke Skywalker, but come on, I think Mark Hamill did a great job.
Well, yes,
I can't even imagine anyone else in that film.
I definitely couldn't, but you could have pulled it off. It would have been fine. Okay, so, you know, of course, you're mainly known for your role as Ralph Hinckley in The Greatest American Hero.
Right.
Although my daughters don't know anything about it. And you kind of got a good taste of fame doing that show. What did you learn about fandom and how to handle fame during your experience of making that show and in the years since? Because I know actually you were in Richmond here just in 2024 for a convention for the GalaxyCon.
Right, right. Well, you know, we didn't have the, at the time I did that show, there was none of these cons going on around the country. It really wasn't until Star Trek, one of those first conventions was a Star Trek convention. And then people said, oh my God, there's an opportunity for the fans to meet the stars. And then you have promoters like GalaxyCon and different people doing, There's a con every weekend somewhere nowadays, but there wasn't at the time when we did Greatest American Hero. I don't think the cons really erupted until about 1985, and by then we were long, long gone. But it's given the show its long legs and endurance because of that and the song, of course, the Believe It or Not theme song, which was so instrumental in the success of that show. I often wonder if the song was more popular than the show.
Well, you know? I can tell you this: it was my senior class's song for that year, which at the time was, I don't quite get it, but I like the song, so that's okay.
Yeah. It was a good song, and I think Seth MacFarlane paid homage to it in Family Guy, and we had it on some of the other shows that they paid homage to. There was a direct give to that show, so it's still popular in the fandom out there. Right. It's still very popular, and I love coming out and meeting the fans at all the shows.
Excellent. Like I said, I actually was planning on going to the Nightmare GalaxyCon thing this last year, and I wasn't able to make it, because I would have loved to meet you at that time. Okay, so, you know, including some of your acting thing, you started doing some voiceover work in animated shows. Was that something that you had leaned into, or was it just something that you thought was just an extension of your normal performing skills?
Well, you know, again, I just kind of fell into that. You know, when I played some of these great characters for, primarily I was working at Warner Brothers, you know, when I did that Animaniacs and some of the other shows there. I played Hawkman in one of the couple of episodes of something that we're doing over there. But I didn't lean into that. It was just, it came. My agents called and said, would you like to come in and audition for something? And I did. And fortunately, I won favor from the casting director, and I was able to fall into that, which I will tell you, though, doing this book of Kolchak, doing the audiobook, and I had been a fan of audiobooks for many, many years. I listened to a lot of them. When I was doing this book, it's very different from acting when you're doing one of these books, because it's very meticulous. You have to pay attention to every vowel sound, to every syllable. And as you're reading, essentially doing these cold readings, you're at the same time infusing the words, you're infusing with life and nuance and character. And it was difficult. You know, I had new respect for the actors that do this for a living. I was very lucky. They gave me a few extra days because I was a newbie. They said, Bill, don't worry about it. We're going to take our time and get it right. And thank God they did. You know, I loved working with these guys from Blackstone, Jared Garcia and James Aquilin from Monstrous Books. I mean, they were very gracious to me, you know.
And actually, you've answered some of my questions, right? Because I wasn't sure if this was your first attempt at doing the audio narration.
It was. Doing an audiobook, yes.
Yeah. Okay, I'm quite a big fan of audiobooks, and I've heard narrators who use very distinct voices for each character and others who just kind of read it like they're simply narrating a story. So what process did you follow, and did you get any external guidance from either Blackstone or Monstrous or did they leave it up to your experience of how you wanted to go about it?
No, as I said, these guys, they were all very, very helpful. And I must admit, I'm a little bit dyslexic, so my reading is slow, and I'd have to go back over things sometimes quite a few times. There were a number of characters in here that I think in my lead up to it, I studied Darren McGavin. I tried to get his infuse as much as I could his character that he played in the shows that he did in 72 and 73 and then the subsequent series. I think I got that. And then some of the characters, the Simon Oakland character of Tony Vincenzo and the Janos Skorzeny, the bad guy, that is the villain in this piece. I tried to do as much as I could. I'm not great doing all kinds of voices, as particularly in the Eastern European. I mean, Skorzeny is Eastern European by descent, and that was difficult. But I did what I could, and I infused it with as much character as I could. So, hopefully, it works.
So how long did it take you to record the entire book?
Well, as I said, this was my first time, so they allowed a little bit more than usual. For me, it was the first time was four full days, 6 hours a day, and then we did three more days, 7 days, but those days weren't quite as full. They were like 4 hour days.
Now that you've done one book, do you think this is something you might want to try again in different genres, or
No, Mark. I think the question is, will they have me back? I think that's the question.
I'm sure they will, but do you enjoy it enough to consider doing it again if the possibility came about?
I think so, and I think. You know, as with all things, practice makes perfect. And I think I'll probably do better next time, you know.
You know,
I'm not making any excuses. Okay, so don't hold me to that.
I would say, because, you know, I've talked to a number of different people who do, you know, do audiobooks basically for their career. And of course, you know, some of them actually have their studios in their house and everything. But I was amazed at the people who are doing like a series of books, but they're, you know, 6 months apart. So how in the world do you remember what that particular character, you made that particular character sound like? Yeah. And apparently, I mean, I've never seen a book that comes out in another series where their character sounds different. So, of course, they probably have the recording of what they did. But to me, that's an amazing talent to continue to maintain.
It is an amazing talent. As I said, I have a lot of respect for those guys that do that. You know, it was interesting, though, when I was doing this book and getting into it and reading about it, I had no idea how some of the other shows that followed this Kolchak paid homage to it and kind of stole some of it. You know, X-Files being one of the most prominent. You know, Chris Carter, he goes on to say how much you know, Jeff Rice's novel and the TV shows played into X-Files. And I think to some degree, you know, I think Steve Cannell, when he was writing The Greatest American Hero, I think he probably leaned into it a little bit himself, you know?
I mean, it's a great source to go by. I mean, I love the show, even though, you know, I saw, of course, the first two TV movies and then the series, which only lasted a season. But, of course, I was a big fan of Darren McGavin anyway.
He was so great. He was so great. And what I discovered in reading was that I didn't realize that Robert Zemeckis was part of that original team on there. And David Chase, who wrote The Sopranos, he also was a part of that of the writing team. So these guys really came out of that camp, you know.
Right. Well, I'll say, well, that's what I have for you today, William. And I want to thank you again for spending part of your morning with us. But before I let you go, I want to give you a chance to again talk about the book when it's coming out, and maybe any other projects that you have coming up.
Well, the audiobook for Kolchak, Night Stalker, is coming out February 11th, they tell me. And what else do I have coming up? I have I did a film this last year with Alfred Molina, wonderful actor. Probably people most remember him recently from the Spider-Man, playing the main villain in that. Yep. And I did a show with him called When We Get There. And I worked with him and lovely Mindy Sterling, that she's done a lot of the Mike Myers films, and she's a wonderful nut in the best sense of the word, and I really enjoyed working with her as well. And that should be coming out in the spring sometime.
Excellent. Okay, like I said, well, I appreciate it, and like I said, I've already pre-ordered my audiobook, so I'm
good.
Looking forward to getting when that comes out, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again in the future.
Well, that would be great. Thanks, Martin. You have a great day. Stay up there, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of GVN Interview, your home for conversations with some of the best in film, television, media, and literature. GVN Interview is a production of Geek Vibes Nation.